Welcome to Resurrection Recovery, a ministry of hope and healing provided by Church of the Resurrection. This podcast is produced by Resurrection Recovery participants as a way to share their experience, strength, and hope as they move through the recovery journey. You can join us every Thursday night at 6 p.m. for a community meal and a personal story, and then support groups at 7 p.m. Check our website at core.org/recovery for special events, location, and a group that might fit your need.
All right, hey everybody. Can everybody hear me, I hope? Okay. What? What time does the 6 o'clock meeting start, Bob? Right now? My name is Tom Langhofer, and I serve as the pastor of Recovery Ministries here at Church of the Resurrection, and I'm a recovering alcoholic, and glad you're all here. So, being an AA guy, I'm going to open us with a moment of silence, and then we'll just say the short version of the Serenity Prayer. Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So this is Resurrection Recovery. We meet every Thursday night. We started this back up in November with the idea of bringing people from the recovery community together to have some fellowship, have some free pizza, as Jimmy is so happy about, and then to share a testimony of somebody who's walked in the shoes of recovery, whether they are in recovery or a family or a friend that's been affected by those of us that are in recovery. But it's just an opportunity to bring everybody together for an hour to get to know each other and to know that you're not alone. And after we do the testimony, then we break into our support groups, which right now we have 14 different support groups that meet on Thursday night. Yeah. So I'm glad you're all here. And we really are trying to, we're really trying to build this ministry. And so, tell people, you know, that's how we're going to, it's a kind of a grassroots deal. We're not getting any real press or anything like that. We just want to promote it from within. And so, anyway, I'm glad you're here. Next week, we have a guy named Nick Rebels with the Full Circle. He's going to be sharing his testimony. And then the week after that, we got Frank Bull from WH810 Radio and Fox 4 Broadcaster. Been around a long time. He's going to share his testimony in 2 weeks from tonight. And then Bobby Joe Reed from Healing House will be sharing her testimony after that. So we're really trying to bring people outside the community in here to share, because this is not just for Resurrection members. This is for, you know, honestly, it's for people outside the community. I'm trying to get in here, right? So that's what Resurrection Recovery is all about. Our meals are provided by the recovery community. This is not a church-funded event. So tonight's meal, for example, is provided by First Call. So, right? Every week we have a different organization sponsoring the meal. Cottonwood Springs is a big sponsor for us, Valley Hope, Midwest Recovery. We just got a lot of different organizations helping us out. So couple other announcements. We have got the church to allow us to use this facility to host an alcohol-free Super Bowl party. Yeah. So that would be on the Super Bowl, which is February 2nd. So we're still working out, yeah, let's just hope, right? We're working out all the details, but this facility will have the game on three screens on Super Bowl Sunday. We'll be providing snacks and drinks. So it's just a place where people can come and watch the game without, you know, in a group atmosphere without alcohol. All right? So spread that around too. So that'll be a month from today. No, February 2nd, whatever. Bob, you got any announcements? You always have something. All right. Yeah, those of you that are familiar with Mama Judy from Healing House, she's the assistant director, and she's got pancreatic cancer, stage 4 cancer, and has been in the hospital. She got out, and then they took her back today. So if you know Mama Judy, she's the most wonderful woman you'll ever meet, and she's not good. So. Okay, well, at this time, I always welcome the featured speaker, and it just happens to be me tonight. So I'm just going to listen. Does anybody else have an announcement for the good of the recovery community? All right. Well, I did take a lot of notes because left without notes, I can go on all kind of tangents, okay? So you'll be glad that I took some notes. I thought I'd just give you a little background on me. I grew up in Lawrence, Kansas, and I had my first drink of alcohol when I was 9 years old. My dad, I guess, found it amusing to give his kid a Coors, and I kind of liked it. So I didn't really drink much at that age, but that was my first taste of alcohol. I was 9 years old. And, you know, I started drinking a lot more later, but that was my first recollection of when I had my first drink. I had some tough times growing up. I was sexually molested a number of times between the ages of 6 and 10 by a neighbor, and also by a family friend, and that really has played on me over the years. I buried that deep down inside. When I got sober and started working the program, that all resurfaced. But that happened to me, and that was a bad time. My dad left my mom when I was 11, so I was raised by my mom. My dad was still in my life to some degree, but and we became close later in life, and my dad left for another woman, and so it was pretty much my mom and I. I had an older brother who was here, but he had gone off to college at that point, so it was just mom and I. I got high for the first time in junior year in high school, and I liked that too. I was dating a girl, and she introduced me to that. And then over the course of the next couple of years, I tried just about anything I could get my hands on. Speed, Quaaludes, Valium, weed, hash, mushrooms, cocaine. They didn't have meth then. I probably would have tried that. But I experimented with a lot of things, but ended up always going back to alcohol. In high school, I was pretty popular. Went on to college and was president of my fraternity. After college, met my wife, Marcy, who's here tonight. And, yeah. And I started a career in banking. I was a banker for 8 years. And that's where I met a guy named Daryl Rodrock, who is a residential developer here in Johnson County. And I ended up going to work for him and was his general manager for 30 years. Along that time, we had two children, two great kids who were doing great in school, a nice house. I chaired economic development for the city of Shawnee, and I was on the economic development board for the city of Olathe. I was very involved here in the church. We joined the church in 2000, and I was we were both very active in this church. So I was doing all these things, and I was supposedly leading this really great life, and I was just addicted to alcohol. And I started mostly social drinking, like I think a lot of us do. And I would drink mostly on the weekends, and I drank a lot. I drank to get drunk, but I had an ability to not necessarily drink during the week. But then things started to change, and I started getting more anxiety in my life, and so I drank more, to where I was drinking mostly every day. And the more I drank, I started getting more anxious, which is weird because, you know, we drink to be relieved of the anxiety. And I started getting really anxious about the fact that the more I drank, the more anxious I got. And so I drank more. And then I started feeling guilty for drinking and ashamed that I was drinking so much. And so I just drank more to where it just became overwhelming for me. And of course, then people told me I was drinking too much. So, you know, it kind of backfires. Those of you that don't have an addiction problem, at least of alcohol, you know, you tell your spouses or your loved ones that, oh, you're drinking too much, you're drinking too much. Well, we generally know that. And so by telling me that anyway, it just led me to drink more because I used alcohol as my coping mechanism. So I just would drink more because it just brought on more anxiety and guilt and shame. And then one night, I woke up in the middle of the night to an anxiety attack. At least that's what we think it was, or a nervous breakdown. I'm not really sure. I don't know that we ever got an answer, but I woke my wife up. It was about 2 a.m. and my whole body was on fire. I felt like I was being stuck with hot needles. And I was freaking out, because at that point my routine was to get up in the night, go downstairs, take about 3 or 4 shots of vodka, and try to get back to sleep. And I did that, and it just the burning sensation throughout my body just got worse. So I woke up my wife, and she helped me get through the night. And she took me to the doctor the next morning, went into emergency room, but it was at Shawnee Mission Medical Center there in Olathe. And it just so happened that my doctor, who I'd not seen in a long time, was the on-call doctor that day. And we met with him, and I confess that I was drinking at that point about a quart of vodka a day. And he strongly suggested that I stop drinking for 30 days. And he gave me 2 options. He said, we can send you to Shawnee Mission detox, or I can medically detox you and let you go home, and you can medically detox at home. Well, at that point, I didn't have any desire to go to treatment. So we stopped off at the pharmacy on the way home, and I detoxed at home. He put me on a anxiety medication called Lexapro, which I stayed on Lexapro for a little over 3 years and was eventually able to taper off of that, but I was on meds for a number of years. But the thing is, once I hit that 30-day mark, I mean, I was counting down, because he said 30 days. And, you know, at that time, I thought, well, I don't know if I can do it or not, but I did it. And I hit that 30-day mark, and I thought, I got this under control. And I thought, I can do controlled drinking. And, you know, so I tried that, and it didn't work. And it just got worse. Which those of us that have the disease, I mean, you cannot do controlled drinking. If you're truly an alcoholic or an addict, there's no such thing as moderation. At least I'm not aware of it. So I drank when I woke up. I had a bottle hidden in the garage, and I would run down to the garage when my wife would get in the shower, and I'd take 4 or 5 shots right out of the bottle, and then I'd run back up into bed so that she thought I had been in the bed the whole time, but the fact is I had already started drinking. I liked to exercise a lot. I'd go to the gym, and I'd be drunk at the gym, and I'd be on an elliptical machine, and I'd sit there and I'd go, man, I am really got a problem here, because I'm exercising to relieve myself of anxiety, and I'm drinking when I'm at the gym. No, who does that? I drank when I was at work. I had bottles on various job sites. I had a bottle in my office. I I went to see a psychologist. I was going to see a psychologist, and I'd drink before I'd go see him, which really worked. I drank here at the church. I was a small group leader on Tuesday nights for Jeff Kirby for our men's late night men's group. So I was drinking as a small group leader for him. I was parking cars on Sunday mornings, and I was drunk parking cars in the parking lot. So come on in. And that was really hurt me, because I was so hypocritical. I was telling everybody that they needed to have Jesus in their life and they needed to follow the way, and I was veering further and further away from my relationship with God. And so I was just feeling so hypocritical. In fact, at that point, the church's website had my picture on it. And so you would go on the Church of the Resurrection's website, and there would be my face, and I thought, how? That just brought me so much guilt and shame that if they only knew who I really was, I wouldn't be on that website, you know? And at that point, I started mixing Xanax and Klonopin and Ambien, all the stuff with alcohol. And so one morning, I woke up, and I don't know why this particular morning, but I woke up, and I was laying there. I said, God, what am I doing? I'm a mess. I'm going to die. And I was just in a bad spot. And I started crying there in bed. And I was like, I was mad at God. So I was blaming him for everything. And I was pretty sure he wasn't real happy with me. So and I didn't pray back then, but I had the courage. I thought, I got to pray. I got to say something. So I figured it had to be a real simple prayer, because I wasn't worthy of anything more than a simple prayer. And I just said, God, please help me. Please help me. And it's not like something just changed in my life, but for some reason I picked up the phone and called Jeff Kirby. Jeff's one of the pastors here and was my spiritual mentor then and now. And I confessed to him what was going on. And he didn't know what to do with me. Most of the pastors don't know what to do with those of us in recovery, by the way. But he did know to call a guy named Rick, who was in the program of AA, and he said, would you want to meet this guy named Rick? And I said, sure. So I went to meet him and had lunch with him one day, and I went drunk because I was scared to meet him. But he started telling me his story, and he was had a year and a half sobriety, which I couldn't even imagine at that point. But he was happy. And he had done all the things that I had done and more. And he said, well, you want to come to an AA meeting? And I was like, sure. I mean, I don't really have another option. And so he met me at the South Leewood group, which is my home group today. And I went drunk because I was scared to death. I didn't know what in the world to expect walking into an AA meeting. But I walked in the halls of AA, and I learned right then and there I was not alone. And I saw all these people in this room, and I don't know how many were there, but they were generally happy. And they asked me, is this anybody's first time meeting ever to an AA meeting? And I raised my hand, and I didn't know what that meant, but it's called a first step meeting. And they went around the room. I told my story, and then they went around the room, and all these people shared, and I learned that I was not alone, that there's a lot of people that suffer from alcoholism. And I learned that God was in these rooms. And I saw God on the wall in the 12 steps, and I thought, wow, I did not know that God was involved in AA. I might not have gone had I known that. But I learned that I needed to surrender to a higher power. And for me, that's been Jesus. But as I told you, I really didn't feel worthy of that. But AA brought me back to Christ. So I went home. I medically detoxed again, went through the sweats, the shakes, the twitches, sleepless times. Marcy had to endure all that. And I started working the program. I got a sponsor. I did 90 meetings in 90 days. And I just took this program seriously because I knew if I didn't, I was going to die. And I had a spiritual awakening 2 weeks into the my recovery program in the halls of AA, which I always have been fascinated by the fact that I went to church all the time. I never had a spiritual awakening in church, but I got into to my AA group and I had a spiritual awakening in AA. And what it was God telling me. I mean, I didn't hear a voice, but what I felt God tell me was, I helped you out of this mess, now I want you to help me, and I want you to help others find sobriety through Christ. And I thought, wow, I've only got 2 weeks sobriety, and I'm feeling this pink cloud, energized mindset that I can help people. And so fairly soon after that, I decided it was time to get out of my comfort zone. And so I started going to detox meetings at Shawnee Mission Medical Center. I helped lead meetings at Shawnee Mission. I tried out Celebrate Recovery. They were looking for a leader, and so I was thinking about that. I went on a mission trip to Haiti, which was not recovery related, but it was getting out of myself. And I just took that all in. I started going to this place called Healing House. And that was October 13, 2010. And I've been going there ever since, leading men's meetings and the Alpha program down there. Some of my very best friends in life are from Healing House. Got to go to Liberia and start an AA program over there, Liberia, Africa. We started a meeting there with 15 people, and last I heard, they had over 200 people in their program there in Liberia. And I started volunteering here at the church because the church, when I admitted I had a problem, which was hard to do because, you know, I was sort of a leader here, and I admitted to the church that what I was doing, that I was drinking here and all the things that I was doing, and they just took me in. And this church was amazing to me. They didn't make fun of me. They didn't shun me. They literally all took me in. And so I felt I owed this church my service. And so I started volunteering to help the pastors because, as I was mentioning, most of the pastors really didn't know what to do with drunks and addicts. And so I would go on calls with some of the pastors, and because the first thing they wanted to do was pray on somebody. Well, I'm sorry, when you're in your addiction, that's not what most of us want right away, right? And so I tried to take a different approach and just talk to them. And we get to the faith thing another time. And I started doing that, and they asked me to become a congregational care minister, a CCM, which is a volunteer position here, and I did that for 5 years. And then Karen Lampe, who's the executive pastor here, pulled me into her office one day, and she goes, I think you might want to consider running our recovery ministry here. I was like, well, I don't know. At that point, I'd been with Rod Rock 27 years, coasting, you know, making a lot of money, and just really kind of riding the wave. And I said, well, she goes, yeah, we want you to be a pastor. I started laughing. I was like, at the time I was 55. It's like, why would I want to go back into school to be a pastor? And she said, well, she went into the story about how she wants me to minister to people in recovery and perform weddings and funerals and blah, blah, blah. And it stuck with me. And, you know, I won't go into all the details of that, but the bottom line is here I am. And I left my career with Rod Rock after 30 years, and I'm 59 now, and this is going to be what I do as long as I'm working. I just love what I'm doing here. I love helping people. People help me so much. And so I owe Karen Lampe, who's not here anymore. She retired a little over about a year and a half ago. But it's because of Karen that I'm standing here trying to build a recovery ministry at this church. So Here's just some things that have helped me stay sober over the years. And my sobriety date, by the way, is January 15, 2010. So if I keep doing the next right thing, I should celebrate 10 years here in a couple weeks. here's what I've learned, that I have to acknowledge, and we all have to acknowledge, that we have a problem and admit to it and admit that we can't do it alone. And until you're willing to do that, it's going to be tough. You need to realize that you've got to find a God and surrender. Surrender to God's will and not our own. I had to realize I was not alone, and that's part of what we're trying to create here is, look at all of us that are affected by addiction in one way or another, and look at most of us seem to be relatively content. So I had to realize that I was not alone, which is what we so often tend to do, thinking we're the only ones that are going through what we're going through, and that's just never the case. It's never the case. I realized I had to find a sponsor and a mentor. So I have a sponsor in AA, and then I have a mentor, spiritual mentor, which is a whole separate thing. But I have those two people to help guide me through my processes of sobriety. Because, you know, I was a big church guy, and my current sponsor, Kevin Kinsella, when I had a year's sobriety, I kind of cut back on the AA meetings, and I started getting more and more involved in church. And he reminded me that I was drunk in church. And he was not putting down church, and neither am I. Obviously, I'm a big believer in church, but I do believe that you've got to have more than church to stay clean and sober. You've got to have a program of recovery. You've got to have a 12-step program or smart recovery or something. You've got to have something besides just church. And I think a lot of people try to do that. And for me, that's just not, I've got to remember where I came from. And I've got to be around people in recovery. I've got to be in meetings where people walk in for the first time. I've got to be reminded of where I was. I learned how important for me, this is just for me, the 12-step program is. Because that got me to look at myself. Because as we say, alcohol is but the symptom. And I had to figure out who I was and focus on that. And that's where some of my past started coming out. And I started working on that. And really, what has kept me sober more than anything, just about, I think, is being of service. We talk about the 12th step. And for me, being of service has been a gift to me, to help those that are less fortunate. And I just, I can't stress enough to those of you that are especially in early sobriety, you know, get out of yourself. Go help somebody. It doesn't even have to be somebody in recovery. That's what I would suggest, but just be of service to somebody. Help people. That's really helped me over the course of time. I guess I would have to, I'd be remiss if I didn't share a couple scriptures that have helped me over the course of time. Matthew 11, 28 through 30, I lean on this so much. Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. That's surrendering to me. I don't have time. 2 Corinthians 12, 9 through 10 is a big one for me. 2 Corinthians 4, talking about weakness, admitting your weakness, admitting you can't do it alone. And I think for me, when I admitted I was not strong enough to do this, I became much stronger. And so pride and ego can be brutal. So for me, admitting that I could not do it alone was so relieving to me and brought me a lot more strength than I ever imagined. By admitting that I needed God to help me, changed everything for me. So in closing, most all of us in recovery coming into this have either been angry at God or figure God was angry with them, right? Thinking that God had abandoned us or that we weren't worthy of God's forgiveness. And we tried many things to battle our addictions with failure after failure, in part because we believed God didn't care for us, right? And yet for me, I've learned that God does care for us and has never left us, never left me. I think why I thought he had left me is because of my own selfish behaviors and my low self-esteem. Why would God want anything to do with me? And that's why I turned away from God. At least I think that's part of it. But then I surrendered back, came back to Christ, and it changed everything for me. So all I know is over the last 2.5 years, I've suffered through the death of both my parents, my mother-in-law, my best friend, who was my sponsor, my dog. Turned out to be a bigger deal than I thought. And, you know, as a lot of you know, the most painful experience of all, which is the tragic, violent death of my daughter, who was murdered 5 months ago today. And if somebody out here had a reason to drink, I think I have one. And yet, the miracle of this program is the desire to drink hadn't even entered my mind. It's like, how does that happen? How have I been able to stay sober? And I've asked my sponsor, I asked my home group, I asked people in recovery, I'm like, how does this happen? Because I really was scared especially the first couple weeks, that I was going to drink again. And I shared that. I went to a meeting Sunday, the day after my daughter was killed, and crying my eyes out to my home group, how scared I was and afraid I was. And I've shared that over and over. I had people driving me to meetings because I couldn't drive. And that Tuesday, I was back down at Healing House leading a meeting. And I was told that if I stay connected with my recovery group, help others who are struggling, stay spiritually connected with God of your choosing, my higher powers, Jesus, and keep doing the next right thing, I'm told I'm never going to have to drink again, no matter what. And all I'm going to say is, if I can do it, you all can do it. Because I'm no better than anybody in this room. And again, I'm just so grateful to have all you here and part of my life. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you would like more information about this ministry or Church of the Resurrection, visit our website at core.org/recovery, where you can find a listing of support groups that meet every Thursday. If you would like more immediate attention, our congregational care ministries have several support options such as prayer requests, counseling, etc. at core.org/care. Thank you for listening today.